Hi folks, and welcome to House Therapy and the fifth installment. And tonight we're going to enter the kitchen. Your time begins now. The MasterChef logo faded and the camera blinked. She wanted to shout, "I can't do this, I am a loser." Instead, she heaved the copper pan onto flame. Looking down at her hands, she pinched salt from its container, then a curl of butter, watching it froth within the cauldron. A lick of saffron, a shave of anchovy paste, a snort of vodka and a cup of minced onions. Sweaty hands shook the handle to rattle the pan. Mr. MasterChef moved in to observe her. Was she stumbling already? She smelt aftershave. Grasping a wooden spoon, she considered beating him back, but realized it wouldn't look great on camera. Strange ideas came to her in rapid succession, biting her with their venom. She couldn't swallow. Her throat was constricted. "Please don't ask me any questions," she prayed to St. Lawrence, the patron saint of cooking. She began to grind the pepper mill and smiled at camera one. Smiling, what a phony bitch am I, she thought. A stream of perspiration channeled between breasts. Under her crisp white apron and chef's jacket, she felt slippery with fears ferment. The pork loin joined the sauté of ingredients. She battered it about with spoon. How long, how bloody long do I cook it, she thought. Perfection danced somewhere out of reach. The tender cut of meat, probably ruined, and to be served to that pompous prick in the Pope-like hat. "You have 5 minutes to finish cooking. Plate up and present your dish." His words scratched like steel wool across her consciousness. Automatically, she killed the heat and turned the pork one last time. "Let it rest, bitch. Give it some time." The gleaming expanse of white china waited expectantly. Her garnishes floated in water like lilies in a pond. Expertly, she arranged the loin and draped the sauce. Her piece de resistance was a single oyster. George beamed at her presentation and her heart soared into her mouth. The studio audience applauded and she grinned under the studio lights. "So, this is what it feels like to be a winner," she thought. For some folks, this is what they consider cooking is all about. That it is some sort of competition and their creation must be judged perfect by culinary authorities above them. Cooking has far more prosaic roots, and for millennia has been the province of kitchen slaves and servants. Cooking can be hard work, even in the age of white goods and labour-saving devices. Many of us avoid the realm of the kitchen and are happy to let mum do all the nitty-gritty work at home. Dads who cook regularly are a modern phenomenon. Some cooks are dilettantes, and others are heater-uppers of pre-prepared dinners and dishes. The kitchen is a polarizing place for many within families and relationships. Of course, there are givers and takers in every union, and finding that balance is a key to happy marriages everywhere. The kitchen is a place of warmth and potential danger. It is packed with sharp implements in most cases, and home to fire. Our kitchens are all about fuel, with fuel for the body and fuel for the oven and cooktop coming to the fore. Modern kitchens can disguise their function through artifice and interior design, but at their heart they are fiery places. What voice is most at home in the kitchen? An imperative one barking instructions is oft required in the heat of the moment and under the duress of cooking up a storm. Happiness is a sharp knife. Here in the kitchen you will meet the no-bullshit you, the part of you that needs to get the job done, the family fed and keep the pantry full of food, the sub-personality which monitors and maintains the state of your refrigerator, the you that keeps a tidy kitchen, the captain in charge of the sink and ensuring the washing up gets done. You may delegate these roles to underlings, but keeping everything ship-shape is the role of the captain on deck. Kitchens, like ships, demand order and constant vigilance, lest they fall into chaotic disrepair. Some people avoid the kitchen like the plague and form relationships with people who embrace this character on their behalf. You will usually find in any marriage or relationship one partner at home in the kitchen and the other playing the role of appreciative guest. The cook at home is the more grounded persona when it comes to dishing up the grub and getting down to business at the sink. Of course, we all conform to these generalities in our own unique ways and degrees. The ancient Greeks, who gave us many of the founding principles upon which we base our modern society, democracy, logic, philosophy, literature and poetry, to name but a few salient examples, had a rich collection of gods and goddesses. Hestia was the goddess of hearth and home, older sister to Zeus and firstborn of the Titans Cronos and Rhea. Hestia is perhaps not as well known today as her siblings Demeter, Hera, Hades, and Poseidon. This may have been due to the fact that she was swallowed by her Titan father Cronus, who, in a bid to avoid being overthrown by one of his children, as prophesied, ate all his children. She was thus the last to be regurgitated once Zeus had forced his father to do so. The Romans also worshipped her in their homes and knew her as Vesta. The areas of responsibility for which Hestia was worshipped and sacrificed to were most aspects of domestic life, and in particular what we now call the kitchen. For it is around the cooking hearth or kitchen fire that a home or house builds up or out. Hestia was always toasted at the beginning of a meal in thanks for the hospitality proffered. She was probably where the early Christians appropriated their saying of grace before dinner from. In the Homeric hymn to Hestia, hymn number 24. Hestia, in the high dwellings of all, both deathless gods and men who walk on earth, you have gained an everlasting abode and highest honour. Glorious is your portion and your right, for without your mortals hold no banquet, where one does not duly pour sweet wine in offering to Hestia both first and last. Interestingly, Hestia was a virginal goddess and refused the suits of both Apollo and Poseidon. Perhaps this is where we get the separation of the sexual roles of the wife and mother in the home, and the focus on providing nurture and hospitality instead. Hestia was seen as the giver of all domestic happiness and good fortune in the home, and she was believed to dwell in the inner parts of every home. She was also the first god mentioned at every sacrifice, as she represented the hearth where sacrifices took place. This is the direct link to our kitchens today and the idea of the sacred chef. There are very few temples of Hestia extant, and this is thought to be because every home was her temple in the Hellenistic world. I think we can draw some intuition from this in our view of our homes being places of divine inspiration. The kitchen has of late become a popular focus of interest, with TV chefs and groovy restaurants grabbing the public's imagination. For house therapy, the kitchen represents our centre, our practical and instinctual selves. This is where we prepare food for family and ourselves. It is also often where food is stored in the refrigerator and pantry cupboards. Food is about survival and security. There is no bullshit about these things, and the kitchen is a place where the elements of nature still regularly intervene. Fire on the stove and in your oven, water at the sink, earth in the bench tops and structure, and air in the extractor fan-forced oven, and all around. You can be hurt in the kitchen if you do not pay attention to what you are about. Unlike the faux furies vented in the kitchens on TV, you can experience some real passions in these hot and pressurized places at home. You might be burning fingers and dishes, dropping scaldingly hot plates, and crying bitter tears over chopped onions. The kitchen is where we show our real reactions to strong emotions, pressure in our lives, and our appetites and jealousies. Have a look around now at your kitchen. The colour of the walls and general layout of things. What is your first impression? What does it say to you about your instinctive self? Are you clinical or passionate? Are the walls white, neutral, or vivid with strong colours? Is it large or small? Is the instinctual, raw and pragmatic you an important part of your life, or is it hidden away or missing? The trend in studio apartment architecture now to build them without kitchens and have neutered mini serveries instead is a reflection of a missing essential in sections of our culture. Stripping away the practical ability to fend for yourself by cooking your own food and becoming dependent on pre-prepared meals is symptomatic of us having lost our way on the journey. Is your kitchen well equipped? Can you cook? Do you enjoy cooking for friends, family, and yourself? Returning to the rich historical connection our modern-day kitchen has with Hestia's hearth, as mentioned earlier, It was the place where the highly necessary ritualized sacrifices took place. These sacrifices usually involved a calf or some other domesticated animal, and those involved with the sacrifice would share in eating the meat of the roasted animal. So, the power of the sacrifice would be in the ritualized slaughtering of the animal in dedication to the goddess for a particular purpose, to bring good fortune upon whatever was so desired, for example. Today, the cook or cooks go into the kitchen, risking cuts, perspiration and burns, to prepare a celebratory meal for our friends and all family, Christmas, birthdays and other days of ritualized festivities. We may not consciously invoke Hestia or any other gods, but the overall intention is the same. We wish to share good cheer with those we love and bring good fortune upon us all. It is interesting to ask oneself, what is true sacrifice and what does it mean in our lives today? When we think of sacrificing something, we tend to see it as foregoing or missing out on something so as to have something else. You cannot have your cake and eat it too. Interestingly, the word sacrifice means to make sacred. So whatever we offer up in dedication to the gods becomes sacred. Actually, the word anathema was the Greek word for laying up or suspending something in wait for the gods, and it has now taken on the meaning of something that is accursed through its contact down through the ages with the jealous Hebrew god Yahweh. Our language and lexicon of words have taken an interesting journey over the last 4 millennia, and it is no wonder we are all a little confused at times. So we could make a correlation between sacrificing something in our life and that thing which has been sacrificed becomes anathema to us or accursed. How do you feel about the things you have sacrificed in your life? A person's love, perhaps, a relationship, a career, types of food, alcohol, drugs, sex, lifestyle, freedom. We do not live in a particularly sacrificial age, more of a you-can-have-it-all age, but can you really enjoy it all and be present for entirely disparate things in your life? Do we appreciate things more when we make room for them in our lives? Perhaps sacrifice still has a part to play in our lives today. Better sharpen those knives. The kitchen is also a place of transformation, where base elements are turned into the gold of love and nourishment. Is your kitchen a space where magic like this can happen? Domestic kitchens have a great tradition throughout the West of being incredibly impractical, lacking preparation space and adequate and functional cupboards. This is now being addressed in more modern homes, and the passion is returning to the kitchen. I think that we suffered a few decades from the American wonder of white goods syndrome, where no home was complete without these wonderful space and time-saving machines, and that a mentality of faster was better grew up around them. Fast food, sliced white bread, whipped cream in a can, all these travesties recorded the hallowed status of modernity and progress, when in actual fact they were soulless shortcuts that ripped the heart out of good cooking. Yes, we still do have a lot of gadgets in the kitchen, but we also now understand that good food needs dedication and application. Bread makers are great, but bread cooked in a wood fire often tastes better, and if it is naturally fermented sourdough, even better. Espresso coffee from your home machine tastes a lot better than instant coffee. Cooking is a lot about giving and demands a generous spirit. Real cooking involves getting your hands dirty and lots of cleaning up during and afterwards. Cooking is also all about timing. To prepare a perfectly cooked dish or meal requires an understanding of scheduling in terms of bringing a variety of cooking tasks together at the appropriate moment. All cooks have memories of their triumphs and their kitchen disasters. We can learn more from our failures than from our successes. The kitchen is a place of harsh lessons and brutal deadlines. It is also a realm full of love in action, where nurturing rattles pots and pans in a symphony of giving loved ones the fruits of the earth. Your kitchen is a place where you can practically respond to the basic needs of living. Is your kitchen letting you do this? Is your kitchen supporting you in feeling centered and secure in dealing with the vicissitudes that life often throws up? Are your knives sharp and well balanced? Do you have enough bench space when preparing meals? Does your stove cook the way you want it to cook? If not, then you are letting yourself down and going around with a bloody great hole where your center should be. As a member of the human tribe, you need to be able to fend for yourself, and the kitchen can empower you to be grounded in the here and now, not wafting around on the ceiling, hoping for the crumbs of human kindness to drop your way. Things we can do to transform our kitchen. As a chef who has had a few restaurants and takeaways and cafes and things, I know all about kitchens and their design downfalls. First and foremost, it is about space, and in particular, benchtop space, where most kitchens, especially older kitchens, are lacking. Storage space comes as close second, and it is in these areas that a solid beginning can be made in transforming your kitchen from a frustration trap into a pragmatic pleasure dome. Cooking is never completely easy. If it is, it isn't real cooking. There must be some blood, sweat and tears in every great dish, but not too much. Unnecessary suffering is not on anyone's menu by choice. I have always been passionate about food. It has in fact been a cornerstone of my existence. I recognised the signs early on when I did not come off the bottle until I was about 4 years old. That warm white milk spurting forth from that rubber teat was obviously essential and nourishing feed. Following that, I remember a wonderful meal that Mother used to make me, consisting of warm, runny, soft-boiled eggs mashed up with torn, crustless, fresh white bread, the merest splash of milk and salt and pepper. Ah, food, it is a heady mix of psychological spells wound up in tasty matter. Foods that comfort us, foods that excite us, and foods that calm us down. Our palate and our attachments to certain foods are, I think, all born of a time when we inhabited a yeasty, humid world of milk sops and wet nappies. Textural considerations are of utmost importance when discovering dishes that provide us with inner sensual happiness. Viscous soups and sauces, gooey eggs and soft steaming scoops of mashed potato or balls of sweet and sticky rice and slippery steamed dim sum. Eating food is pleasure, and filling the empty tummy with something very scrummy is best. Pleasure. It is a universal primary motivation. Or is it simply the avoidance of pain? Is hunger once satisfied the end of the matter? Or do we seek to enter that satiation by choosing just what we put in our mouths? The pursuit of pleasure to achieve sensual gratification. Is it inextricably linked with our need for nourishment? Babies must have sucker and must be touched to survive and thrive to adulthood. Food, in my opinion, is not just fuel and not simply the sum of its parts. It is more than a list of kilojoules, fats, carbs and proteins. Like love, it must be made pleasurable to do its work well. The Greek philosopher Epicurus stated, "The magnitude of pleasure reaches its limit in the removal of all pain. When such pleasure is present, so long as it is uninterrupted, there is no pain either of body or of mind or of both together. The flesh receives as unlimited the limits of pleasure, and to provide it requires unlimited time. But the mind, intellectually grasping what the end and limit of the flesh is, and banishing the terrors of the future, procures a complete and perfect life, and we have no longer any need of unlimited time. Nevertheless, the mind does not shun pleasure, and even when circumstances make death imminent, the mind does not lack enjoyment of the best life." Cooking a beautiful meal for family, friends, and loved ones is an act of devotion. What better way to show how much you love someone? I have always said that cooking is the only kind of art that really gets inside you. We ingest the goodness, literally. It is a creative act, and it is a labour of love. Sharing a meal with friends and family is a sacred occasion. We see each other enjoying the fruits of our working life through a basic pleasure. Consuming food, tasting, smelling and touching textures with our tongues, it is a simple fact of life which can be a wonder or a disappointing chore, depending on your circumstances and attitude. I have always taken the sensual pathway to pleasure, and eating great food is a big part of this approach to living. Each mealtime is an opportunity to create lovingly, consume, and be thankful for. Our home is a lively reflection of our state of being, one that is constantly updated by our presence and the presence of our co-inhabitants. Take a moment now to imagine looking at your home, your kitchen, as a complete stranger would. Begin looking from the outside and looking in. What do you notice? Perhaps grab a pen or paper and take some notes. What do you notice about your kitchen? What stands out? What can you see most prominently? Our homes change as we do. They reflect our stages of life. As children in a home, they are places to explore and to sometimes fear when the lights go out at night. They are also like the favourite clothes our mother and father might wear and are thus forever associated with them. When we are teenagers, our homes can be experienced as prisons of extreme boredom, never seeming to change in their appearance or nature, always contaminated by the reactionary attitudes of our parents. Perhaps as young adults in our first experience of living away from mum and dad, they are places of glorious freedom with no one to nag you to clean up. Then as first-time parents, the home becomes a place requiring attentive renovation to make safe and quiet and nurturing for your beloved offspring. As a family home for our children, it is often a bustling, noisy place, shaking with all the life going on there. Then, after the children have left the nest, quiet descends and the contrast can be mausoleum-like after years of frenetic activity. We then may move to something smaller just for two and with lots of retiring quiet. Homes are, I think, three-dimensional mirrors, endlessly adjusting to our own evolving reflections throughout our lives. Spend a moment now contemplating the importance of your home to your life. Perhaps write down five essential things that your home bestows upon your existence. What is it about your home that you really love? Remember some of the times surrounding those key parts of your house or apartment. House therapy can assist you in rediscovering some of the love you feel for your home. The human brain is the most complex physical structure we know of anywhere in the universe. There are around 85 billion neurons in the average human brain. That's comparable to the number of stars in the average galaxy. But that doesn't begin to describe the complexity. Each neuron is thought to make between 10,000 and 100,000 connections to other neurons, making the brain a computer way beyond anything our current technology can simulate. Brian Cox from The Human Universe. In this quotation, it's a reminder that we are quite possibly the crowning achievement of existence in terms of biological life. Homo sapiens have, through their history, consistently created supernatural entities called gods to sit above them on the hierarchy of beings. The single universal fact that all these gods share is their complete lack of verifiable evidence for their existence. I have pondered whether it is a self-esteem issue which has motivated the invention of these invisible entities by us. None of us really wants to take ultimate responsibility for our actions. Of course, divinity has been employed by power brokers, princes, and high priests to bolster their authority over their subjects throughout recorded history. Whatever the reasons for deification, it may now be time for humankind to step up and claim responsibility. Homo sapiens appear to have emerged as a distinct hominid species around 200,000 years ago. There had been recognisably modern humans for some 2.5 million years on the Earth. We descended from the great apes, which have been around for some 6 million years. Some 70,000 years ago saw the beginnings of proto-languages among Homo sapiens and the development of distinct cultures. Homo sapiens leave East Africa and spread out across the globe, reaching Australia 60 to 45,000 years ago. By 13,000 years ago, all other human species are extinct. Three important revolutions shaped the course of history. The cognitive revolution kick-started history about 70,000 years ago. The agricultural revolution sped it up about 12,000 years ago. The scientific revolution, which got underway only 500 years ago, may well end history and start something completely different. Yuval Noah Harari, Homo sapiens. Humankind lived for many millennia, mainly in caves, as these afforded maximum protection from the elements and wild animals. They lit fires in the entrance to their caves, which gave them both warmth and a fiery deterrent to inquisitive predators. Caves were womb-like and mirrored our emergence from our mother's loins, so would resonate deeply within our psyches as places of safety and nurture. This is very important to realize, that our homes are, at their very core, our return to our original places of gestation, our mother's womb. As a species that needs sleep to physically survive, we require a safe place in which to do so, and our homes, in their womb-like function, provide this. Be aware of this essential and primal calling within your home, and look to see if your home is providing this at an optimal level. You must be able to feel safe and nurtured within your home, your own home. Failure to do so may cause health problems and psychological unrest. Your home is a very real reflection of who you are. And as a model of your interior universe, its walls are expressions of the demarcations within you and your various personality constructs. I always think of the Japanese people and their houses with paper-thin walls, showing that their barriers of privacy are almost more symbolic than material, and that their sense of privacy is inside their heads rather than in their walls. The vibrations of other lives must reach through the paper and be felt within their bones, and yet they maintain the illusion of a private existence. To conclude, the kitchen is both the engine room of our houses and homes, and also the place where we are called upon to make sacrifices. For the love of our family and friends, we create beautiful dishes and nourishing meals to feed those around us. So make sure that your kitchen is a temple where these kind of things can happen, where there's space to do that, and where you can enjoy yourself in being creative and giving in that way. Thanks very much.